I will work day in and day out. Wake up and smell the coffee.
The independence case is a powerful one.
Another future's possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Jacob Jefferson, who is the Conservatives, one of the Conservative Party's candidates for Bushey North in the upcoming May local elections. Welcome to the podcast, Jacob.
Hiya, very pleased to be on.
It's great to have you on, Jacob. And the first question I'd like to ask is, what made you decide to put yourself forward as a Conservative Party candidate at these upcoming local elections?
I've lived in Bushey, where I'm standing, for my whole life, and I've been involved in the Conservative Party for some 4 or 5 years, you know, university especially, getting involved, and I'm now, you know, I've moved back home in August, having been at university for 4 years. I guess it was just good timing, wanting to sort of re-engage with politics back in Hogsmeade. Which I hadn't really done when I was at university. I knew I had a bit before university, but you know, you're not back enough for where you're at university to really engage. I did a bit when it was online in COVID, but and when it went back again, I kind of couldn't really go to meetings again. So just wanted to get involved again, and you know, lucky that they had their all-out elections this May, and. You know, just wants to get involved. I think it's so us people who are sort of involved in politics and like politics, I think we just like to feel like we're doing something and getting involved. I think that was a sort of a key motivation. It's like, I like politics, and I now actually want to do something, and it's actually cool. It's cool to be a candidate and see your name on leaflets and calling cards, and actually also, you know, be able to stand in. I mean, I'm not standing in the exact ward I live in, but I'm standing in the ward that's about a 3-minute drive from where I live. So it's basically where I live. I think that's quite cool. I feel like increasingly seeing more, you know, at least at parliamentary level, more MPs standing in seats that they actually live in or are from. You know, more of a focus on localism in politics in general. So that's just interesting. I don't necessarily know if that's a good thing, because then you feel like some MPs turn into caseworkers more than legislators. But I think it's still cool to be able to stand in the area. I've lived in the same house for 23 years of my life, or all 23 years of my life. And it's cool to stand where you're from and actually be able to. I guess I spent 4 years at Warwick knocking on doors of people who. Yeah. I guess I didn't understand in the same way that I'd understand someone who lives where I live here, and you know, I'd actually understand a lot of their issues. So that's a bit more interesting. It's different type of politics, and again, it's also just weird to introduce yourself on the doorstep as the candidate rather than usually I'm here on behalf of this person, that person.
Yeah,
it's slightly weird because you really are there selling yourself, and it's a good experience as well.
Yeah, of course.
In selling yourself.
Yeah. In terms of what you bring up Warwick there, and of course, you've worked on with the student union as part of the student union at Warwick. Do you think that that's given you a certain amount of experience in how an organisation like a student union, like a council, works? And do you think that that's something that you could potentially bring to the council, that kind of experience, if you do get elected?
Yeah, I think there's probably, it's weird that there are lots of similarities, but I guess that makes sense that sort of student politics does actually replicate real politics, because a lot of the people in real politics started out in student politics as well. I think a lot of it's, you know, working with different groups and stakeholders. That's something I really learned about at working for the Students Union, how important that is for big organizations to, you know, in terms of consultations, in terms of making sure that there's consensus towards big decisions, that kind of thing, and really being able to bring people together, and that's definitely something that, and you know, as a councillor, especially hopefully it's the party still in control of the council, that you have to be to really be able to lead big groups of people, a diverse range of groups and people, and you know, the University of Warwick is full of committees, Their whole organization is run through committee structure. The massive tree of, the top and three off that one, and then each one has another three or four of those. Same with the students' union to some extent, but definitely in the University of Warwick. And obviously, local councils are also just run on lots and lots of committees, death by committee sometimes. There's a lot of similarities. I think that's definitely one of the selling points, I guess, for me, that I have already been, I guess, an elected office holder. And to be honest, I got 1,600 votes in my student union election. That's definitely more votes than I'll be getting in my local election. Not because I'm saying I definitely won't win, but I mean, the Lib Dems won in this ward in 2019 and they got 800 votes. There's no way, even if I win, there's no way I'll be getting 1,600 votes in here. So it's kind of funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. In terms of the kind of priorities you think that local residents have, what are the issues that you think are going to be key to this election? And what are the sort of things that you feel that you want to prioritise going into the campaign?
The main thing that I think, well, in Bushy at least, and across Hartlepool, Greenbelt stuff, in my personal opinions are more, I'd rather we didn't build on the Greenbelt, but kind of have to because there's a housing crisis and everyone has to take its fair share of housing, but it's a massive issue. It's the issue that gets anyone who owns a house in an area which has a lot of green space, and that's what Hartsmere does. It's an issue that gets people very riled up. The plan committees here are usually really well attended in Hartsmere, and people are very, very passionate. There was an application on the development just a couple of roads over from where I am now for about 300 homes, which had a massive turnout at the planning committee to oppose, and it did get turned down. And I think people probably looking, who's actually the best defender of the Greenbelt. But I think, unfortunately, all politicians aren't particularly transparent, really, about the planning process. They're not, all councils have to have local plans, because it's the law to have a local plan. If you don't have a local plan, then, developers can just win everything on an appeal. So I think campaigners are sometimes a bit disingenuous to voters and say, we can stop all this building on the Greenbelt. It's like, well, you might be able to, but you do actually have to have a local plan first. And then everyone sees the local plan and that it might have building here or there, and everyone freaks out and the local plan never happens. But I think the wider thing is obviously cost of living. Councils trying to keep council tax low. Hartsmere has, only risen council tax by a couple of percent. Their share of council tax by a couple of percent when obviously inflation is at 10%, and that's really important. I'm really glad we've done that. Trying to support those in need at council level. I think that is the two main things. The turnout in local elections are always notoriously low. Even in the most engaged areas, they're less than 50%, and in lots of areas they'll be 20-30%. And it's a shame, because a lot of the people who probably actually need the council support more probably aren't voting in local elections, because they're sort of more time poor to pay attention to local elections. And it's different to a general election, because a general election you see on TV and the news every day. Local elections, you only really see through a letterbox, with leaflets and maybe sometimes on social media in sort of like Facebook groups, that kind of thing. But it's not a big thing the way general elections are. So the people who actually would benefit from council support on lots of things probably don't engage with it as much. And that's obviously a challenge to those of us who campaign.
Mm-hmm. How much of a role do you think that the record of the Conservative group on the council will play into the campaign? Do you think that it's something that you'll be able to use as a means of getting voters who might have voted Lib Dem last time in the ward to switch to you and to support you?
I think this year especially is going to be a case where it's going to be very hard to really push the local authority success, because you know the national government are not polling very well. You know, they're polling in the sort of mid to high 20s, and I think a lot of the core support might see this as a, you know, a protest, not necessarily a protest, but they might just sit at home, even if they find out the council. I think our thing in Hartsmere is trying to make people realise that you may not like the government, Conservative government, but if so, we have 28, 27 seats of the 39 on the council. So you know, if we were to lose eight, nine seats, we'd lose majority on the council. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think that people will realise that and are there, but they're actually the national government aside and say, actually, you know, we don't want it would be a Lib Dem Labour coalition in Hartsmere, because it's not going to be particularly effective. I'm not going to say that the coalition of chaos line. I'm not going to go down that one. I don't know the Lib Dems locally well enough. They've only got three councillors at the moment, but see, who knows, they could gain more. But I hope not. I think it will be difficult, and I think we'll see that across loads of councils. There are loads of Conservative controlled councils, especially in the southeast, who you know may have been really successful, but are going to really shock and told them to the majorities, just because people will see it as a chance to send a message to the government. I think the government's had good headlines in the last day with the Brexit deal, and you know, hopefully it's good timing. They can start to get a few more headlines, and those polls can creep up a bit. I don't think they'll go up massively, but even if you said obviously helps in some areas. I think a weird thing with these local elections is most of them will be from 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The last time they went up, if they all have elections, which is a lot in the southeast, are the Conservative controlled ones. And the Conservative Party was obviously pretty unpopular in May 2019, because that's when Theresa May left. So, you know, actually, weirdly, we're polling higher, you know, because then we were on sort of the high teens, low 20s, actually polling higher than we did then. Obviously, the difference is that Labour are on about double what they were polling in May 2019. And even the Lib Dems are probably polling lower than they did in May 2019 at the moment, but they'll probably actually have as good a day, if not better than they did. So it's a sort of an interesting dynamic there. I think one factor is the fact that the Brexit Party were polling on about 25%, but didn't actually stand at local elections, which is partly why you didn't see that impact happen as much. But yeah, I guess the short answer is it's gonna be really difficult to get people to not think of national politics. And that's a big challenge. I think Conservative councils have just got to, you know, shout as much as they can about keeping council tax low. And you know, all of their achievements over the last 4 years, just try and really hit those messages home. But it will be really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that part of perhaps the way that people are reacting to the Conservative government is in part due to, in the past year, the change in leadership of the Conservative Party from Boris Johnson to Liz Truss to now Rishi Sunak? And how do you think, in the long term, because of course there's a general election that's going to be coming in the next couple of years or so, in the long term, how do you think you, as a Conservative Party, can repair some of that maybe shaken confidence that people who supported the party previously felt? Do you think that there is any way before the next election that the Conservatives can make those voters who have currently drifted away from them return to them? And is that a matter of personality, as in the personality of the leadership, or policy, or a mixture of both?
I think with all the different wings that the Conservative Party now has, and the different, you know, same people who think they're important because they were ministers for a month, chancellor for a month, or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's so hard for Rishi. I wish he really would take a few more risks with policy and actually try to do something a bit more radical, but I guess anything that's a bit more radical, people will have memories of Liz Truss trying to be quite radical. And in my opinion, I wanted her to be radical, but clearly it didn't go the way it did. It didn't go the way we wanted it to. So I think it's so difficult for him to really take any risks because there's so many different, you know, you've got too many MPs really who all want different things. It's such a tough coalition. I mean, the fact that Tony Blair, with, you know, 400 plus MPs, managed to, you know, mostly hold that coalition together for 10 years or so was incredible, really. Oh, well, 8 years, I guess, at least. You know, Boris was clearly incapable of doing it. You know, having, was it Beaconsfield and Bolsover, you know, trying to fit all those together was always very difficult. I think the fact that the SNP might be on the down is also not very good for the Conservatives because, you know, it's one of those weird things that, you know, an SNP having lots of seats in Scotland was one of the reasons why the Conservatives had a good majority. And it's sort of, yeah, one of those weird things that although we wanted to kill off, you know, kill off independence movement, the SNP, for Conservatives to actually have a majority, you still need to keep it at a certain level. If you're being cynical about these things, I'd much rather a Labour government in the United Kingdom than a Conservative government in one where the United Kingdom isn't together. Depending on what the Labour government did. You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I had to go one way, I would. So I think really it's what Keir Starmer does if Keir Starmer makes mistakes. And I think that's the only way the Conservative Party can actually get back. I think people will want Rishi over time. And I think the fact that he's sort of keeping a steady ship sort of will mean, you know, he'll gradually build a bit more support back. But it may get him to, you know, the low 30s, mid 30s in the polls. There's no way he's going to be hitting 40 plus. So actually, I think it's completely down to Keir Starmer. He gets it wrong. Although, you know, obviously I disagree with a lot of things that he's said and done, in the eyes of the public, it's quite clear that he hasn't yet. And I think a lot of people aren't really inspired by him. I don't think his vision for the country isn't something that people are looking at and thinking, yes, we absolutely need that. But I think he looks more of a safe pair of hands than the Conservatives because of all the turmoil that we've had in a time where people really needed support from government with the cost of living crisis. So, yeah, unless he has another, what was it, the curry thing in Durham, that if something like that, and then it goes the wrong way to him. He managed to get out of that one very smoothly and no one really seemed to care or remember it. And I don't think he's the type of person who has a lot of skeletons in his closet, to be honest. I think they would have been found already. Unless they're being saved for, you know, a week before election day, but I don't think they are. So unless he makes a massive mistake, I think it's going to be really difficult. It's saddening to hear that. It's sort of saddening for me to say that, you know, a year and a half out from an election or a year out from a general election. But I think we've, you know, people voted... A lot of people lent us their votes, but because of Brexit and not liking Corbyn, but a lot of people voted Conservative in good faith, thinking we were, going to have 4 years of good government. And obviously, there's been so many hurdles thrown at it with COVID and the war in Ukraine, which has made it really, really difficult. And any government has struggled. We've not treated the public with respect, and I think they think we've, you know, taken you for a jolly a lot of the time. To be honest, in hindsight, I probably would have wanted us to keep on to Boris because at least some people liked him and he may have found a way to bring it back. I mean, obviously he didn't in the end, but I would have rather, you know, I'd rather go back to July 2022 now and just hold on to Boris rather than go through the, you know, this terrible sort of 8-9 months that we've been on since where, you know, people do not really like the Conservative Party anymore. Even if you ask the, you know, the 25 to 30% of the people at the moment in the polls who say they're going to vote Conservative, I'd assume that the majority of those people, you know, are voting Conservative because they want to keep Labour out rather than because they think the Conservatives are going to do much for them. And that's a real shame to say that. But we don't really look in tune and with what the country needs. And I think Rishi is doing a decent job in very difficult circumstances. unfortunately, he's not the best person to look like he understands what, you know, the average person is going through. Yeah. But that's no fault of his own, right? But it's probably quite a hurdle for him. And I do think he's doing a decent job. And I think it's going to be too much for him to turn this around. And he, as I said, unless there's a massive, massive Labour own goal, I don't think that. I think Labour are too well organised now to you know, avoid that.
Mm-hmm. Looking past whatever the future might be, focusing on the polls and presuming that there is a Labour government after the next election, where do you think the Conservatives need to go to get people who have, as we've mentioned, fallen out of love with the party at the moment? What direction does the party, the Conservative Party, need to go in to get those people back, do you think? Is it, again, a case of radical policies, a radical offer? Do you think that the Conservatives need to be more radical in the future, going into opposition in an attempt to win people back?
I think in opposition, I think you have to be a bit more radical. It kind of depends what the government is, right? Labour government. Quite radical, then you respond by being a bit more pragmatic. If the Labour government's very samey, and I think on economic policy they'll be very samey, even on constitutional social things, I'm sure there'll be some reform, but it's probably the type of reform that the Conservative Party would have been at in 15 years anyway, if you know what I mean. You know, there's a sort of joke that conservatism today is, you know, what leftism was about 15 years ago, but on some of those issues. But I think they do probably need to be a bit more radical. I wish that we'd, not necessarily that it's my view, but for the sense of the Conservatives, I wish we'd lead more into realignment, you know, more into red. And, you know, my politics are more to the right economically, but I think we probably should have gone more left economically and a bit more right socially and constitutionally. And I think Boris was just a mismatch and, you know, too much in the middle of all those things that managed to annoy everyone. So I think for the success of the Conservative Party, they should have leaned more into realignment. That's not necessarily my views. I would agree with some of those things that would come out of that realignment than other things. I wouldn't, especially someone who, you know, prefers small government economically. I think, you know, a massive thing is we can't have any of the same face. If we were in opposition, we need fresh faces. And obviously a weird thing is if there's some massive landslide, you could be left with a very weird bunch of, you know, 100-150 Tory MPs. There could be some really, really talented people who people expect to be future ministers who, you know, lost their seats, and you could be left with, you know, a weird group of people, basically just people who are in safe seats. And so that would define it a lot. I'm a massive fan of Kemi Badenoch. You know, I supported, I know I wanted her to be leader in the summer when she stood before we got onto the final two. And I think she'd be really great as someone who's young, has an international outlook on the world. Obviously she wasn't born in this country. But I think understands Conservative voters, and actually understands that, you know, Boris is very good at talking about being, you know, conservative and that kind of stuff. It wasn't really that. I think she actually is at her heart, and she knows how to. I think she knows how to talk about the right issues. I don't think she's the Finch article or anything, but I think she's a really, really exciting prospect for me. And, you know, being leader of the opposition is very, very difficult. No one knows who you are, right? Starmer really had to build up, you know, over a couple of years who he was. And it's difficult to, you know, when you're so used to being in government, as by then we would have been for 14 years. It's a really, really difficult task. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say she'll then be prime minister next election. But I think it needs to be younger people. I think the old guard out there, how they go, you know, needs to be, no, I say the old people. Rishi's only 42, but it feels like all the old guard, young with all those people, which is weird. But I think I think, unfortunately, leaning into all the red wall realignment's probably gone now. I don't think we could go back to that. So I think we probably need to try and refocus on more of the, you know, traditional conservative seats, and try and get those back with, you know, more, I think, in my view, sort of more economic liberalism. I guess some of the policies that this Truss was pushing forward, but in a way it's a bit more coherent, you know, in terms of, you know, more house building, you know, more work incentives for younger people, trying to take, you know, the burden off younger people, in the economy, which is obviously, you know, with our aging population, that it's kind of skewed towards younger people paying for all that. It's very difficult to get around, but I kind of think that's the type of conservatism that I think will help us appeal to new groups. And I think the other thing is to actually sort out immigration, because the Conservative Party have been promising to reduce immigration and got elected on reducing immigration for four general elections, never done it. And that's annoyed a lot of people, and that's probably one of the reasons why Reform are on, you know, 5-7% in the polls. That's something that, you know, I think people forget. That's, you know, imagine if we got all that back, because CERS has already beat 30 plus points in the polls. And, you know, I think a lot of people will look down on that kind of thing and say, you know, those people already voted to Conservative. But I think that's actually, that should be a message that Conservatives are actually going to fulfill the things they've said they're going to do. And I don't think, because, you know, that's something that Labour talk very tough on it, but I don't think they'll sort out in government. So it'd be nice if we actually could follow through on some of these promises, these big promises that we've actually made to our core vote.
Absolutely. Well, we're coming towards the end of the podcast, Jacob. It's been great to have you on, great to speak to you. But I have one final question for you. Now, I know, apart from being a Conservative, that you're a great supporter of Arsenal, and Arsenal have a game coming up tomorrow against Everton. So my final question to you is this. If you had to pick one member of the cabinet to replace one member of the Arsenal squad before the game tomorrow, who would you pick?
So which Arsenal player do I want in the cabinet as well? I've got to think of that.
Yeah. A full job swap.
Gosh. I've got to think of someone who's actually quite athletic. Well, Rishi actually likes football, doesn't he? So yeah, that's for that. And I reckon he's probably got a bit of pace as a winger. So I'll swap him in with Saka, not because I think Saka should be on the pitch, but I think Saka is a very compassionate person, and he's very respectful, I think. And I think that'd be a good person to have in cabinet.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you once again for coming on the podcast, Jacob. If people want to find out more about you and about your campaign, where should they go to find out more?
Well, I mean, I've got a Twitter account, but Twitter's not really localized, right? So most of my campaign stuff's on sort of Facebook and local Facebook groups in Bushy. So unless there's people in Bushy, they probably won't see them. But I'm not quite stuck on my sort of actual personal Facebook. But I think, yeah, most of my time just going to be knocking on doors and leafleting rather than, you know, doing posts to people who don't live in the area. So, you know, that's more for my own PR rather than actually helping the election. So I'll try and do more of the helping the election bit.
Absolutely. Well, thank you once again for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, @DebatedPodcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast, or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.